Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, President Trump has warned that his reciprocal tariffs, which take effect today, may cause some pain for average Americans, leaving many to wonder how much pain, how soon, and for how long. Also this morning, the latest multitasking trend finds people getting in some exercise as they're conducting business. But does working out while working enhance performance, or is it just a distraction? And to your health this morning, even though many people add more fish to their diet this time of year, which can be a good source of beneficial omega-3s, most of us still aren't getting enough of these vital, healthy fats. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. By the way, today, the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio is encouraging people to wear blue to support kids across the state. Ohio Wears Blue. It's part of a nationwide initiative to recognize and promote efforts to prevent child neglect and child abuse. Those who participate can highlight their involvement by using the hashtag OhioWearsBlue2025 on social media. And they are also promoting the fact that Ohio has a hotline where anyone can report potential child abuse. It is 855-OH-CHILD, 855-OH-CHILD. So wear blue today is the message here. Some of the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This will... I'm not sure how you feel about this. If you work with computers, as all of us do, I'm not sure that there's anyone these days that doesn't work with computers, either their job or, you know, just personally at home. A recent study suggests the person's intelligence has a greater impact on their computer proficiency than previously assumed, indicating that practice alone may not be sufficient for ease of use. In other words, if you have ever struggled to figure out your computer, if you have ever fought with your machine, it may have to do with how smart you are and not how adept you are at actually using computers. So basically, they're saying that anybody who's ever fought with their computer, the problem is you, and you're just maybe not smart enough. Well, that's nice. General cognitive abilities, such as perception, reasoning, and memory, were found to significantly influence an individual's performance in everyday computer tasks. The study highlights the importance of cognitive abilities alongside prior computer experience. So, yes, learning, you know, maybe taking a class to learn how to work your computer and all of that, that will only get you so far, is basically what the study is saying. You have to be smarter than the machine. The study underlines concerns about digital equality, stressing that in today's complex digital landscape, cognitive ability is crucial for effective navigation. And that's kind of the point, is that as we move more and more to a digital society, there are going to be some people left behind. That's the very serious message that they're trying to get across, the point that they're trying to get across with this study. But the bottom line is that for anyone who's ever struggled with their computer, it's kind of kicking you while you're down. It's telling you maybe you're just not smart enough after all. You know, that's basically what it's saying. That'll make you feel good this morning. Let's see. But don't worry, you can always rely on your pet to love you. This is another study that I happened to see. And it was like right after that story on the Newswire, I saw this story. A study from the University of Kent suggests that owning a pet can have a significant positive impact on life satisfaction and well-being, which, that's not news. We've known that. You know, pets, can have a positive impact and make you feel better after you've been battling your computer or whatever. But they actually, in this study, put a number on it. They say owning a pet can have a significant positive impact equivalent to the happiness gained from an extra $89,000 a year. So if you were to give up your pet, you would have to make an extra $89,000 a year in order to get the same amount of happiness. The research was based on a survey of 2,500 households, which indicates that pet ownership provides similar benefits to those derived from marriage. That's the other thing that they came up with in this survey. Similar benefits to those derived from marriage. The lead author of the study, Dr. Adelina Gashwantner, emphasized the substantial monetary value associated with the companionship of pets. So they are worth their weight in gold and then some, according to this study. The Full House house has sold again. Did you happen to see this? I thought this was an interesting item. The iconic Victorian house that was featured in the TV show Full House in San Francisco has sold again. It was just like 3 or 4 years ago. It says was sold back in 2020. I thought it was more recently than that. I know it was on the market for a long time, finally sold, and now it is sold again. Located on what is called Postcard Row, the four-bedroom home was originally listed at $6.5 million last June, and it was sold for, I think, $6 million. It was listed for $6.5 million. It sold for $6 million, I think, was the final number. Fans recognize its famous front door and bay window, although the interior scenes obviously were not filmed in the home. They were on a Hollywood set, but the exterior shots, the establishing shots in the show, featured the film or featured the house, and so it's become a tourist attraction. The house, built in 1900, renovated in 2019, previously owned by creator Jeff Franklin, who sold it for just over $5 million the last time it was sold in 2020. And so whoever sold it made some money on it. But that is not unusual for homes that have been featured in TV shows and movies, famous homes, to change hands many times. It is one of those things, if a Hollywood producer ever comes up to you and says, we want to use your home, we think it'd be perfect for our film or our TV show, might want to think twice about that, because if the film or TV show becomes uber popular like Full House was, it becomes, or the Brady Bunch house was kind of the same way. And there have been a lot of movies that have been the same way. Becomes almost more than people can bear for a private residence. Now, sometimes I know, like the resort that was featured in the film Dirty Dancing, they've turned that into a huge business and made a lot of money off of the connection to that film. The film was set in the Catskills, but it was, I think the resort is in the Carolinas. Anyway, sometimes turn that into, a profit center, but for a private home, it becomes sometimes more the people can bear, which I thought was kind of interesting. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, Uber is out with their 2025 Lost and Found Index, listing some of the most bizarre items left in ride shares over the previous year. This is always fun when they come out with this list. The Lost and Found Index, the strange things that people leave behind in their Ubers. Among the more, by the way, they say New York City was deemed the most forgetful city. That's where more things are left behind in an Uber than anywhere else, is in New York City. Some of the unusual items that made the list. A mannequin head with real human hair. A live turtle. A 5-gallon bucket of beans. Who's carrying around a 5-gallon bucket of beans? I mean, a live turtle, okay, maybe it's your emotional support animal, I don't know. Even a mannequin head with human hair, maybe it's, you know, somebody who is, I don't know, a cosmetologist who's, you know, it's their training dummy or something. Although, how you could forget that, I have no idea. But a 5-gallon bucket of beans, that's, wow. Other unique finds include a chainsaw. Where did I leave my chainsaw? Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. If I'm an Uber driver and somebody gets into my car with a chainsaw, no. I'm not taking that fare. You can go find another ride. No chainsaws allowed. A Ghostbusters ghost trap. Somebody left behind in an Uber. Fresh breast milk. I feel like every year somebody leaves some kind of container of breast milk in an Uber. I don't know. Another weird thing. A urinal. Who's walking around with a urinal? But one was left in an Uber. A plunger. Maybe for the urinal. I don't know. Hannah Montana merchandise. Okay. 10 live lobsters were found in one Uber. A set of Shrek ears. Which, again, that sounds weird, but maybe it was a Halloween costume. Maybe it was, you know, part of a, you know, somebody going to a costume party and falls off their head. They didn't realize it. So that's not all that hard to imagine. A Viking drinking horn. Okay. And get this. This is the most bizarre item left behind. This is what I think may be the most bizarre item left behind in an Uber, not just in the past year, but this may be one of the worst ever. A set of someone's divorce papers. Someone's divorce papers. They left in an Uber. Oh, ouch. There you go. So the moral of the story, always double check before you get out of your Uber, your rideshare, or a taxi cab or what have you. Make sure that you have your divorce papers. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny early today, then increasing clouds, a high in the mid-40s. Showers possible tonight, a low around 40. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says the jury is still out on whether the president's tariffs will work out the way the president wants.
He says he hopes the tariffs have the desired effect and help the U.S. and Ohio. The president says he's not backing down on tariffs, saying, quote, sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something. Governor DeWine had this to say.
You know, these are the president's decisions. He's made these decisions. We can only hope that, you know, this does, in fact, work and puts the United States in a better position. But the jury is still out.
ONN political reporter Doug Petcash reporting. The Findlay Police and Fire Departments each have a new addition. Findlay Mayor Christina Mern recently swore in Hunter Copus with the Fire Department and Skylar Newfer with the Police Department. Copus, a graduate of Findlay High School, brings with him a strong connection to the department, following in the footsteps of his father, who retired from the Findlay Fire Department in 2010. And Newfer, a graduate of Kenton High School, previously served with the Kenton Police Department for 8 years as a patrolman and 4 years as a sergeant, and now lives in Findlay with his family. Learn more about both and see their pictures in this story on our website. A fun and nostalgia-filled event is coming up at the Hancock Historical Museum.
Oh, as if!
The museum will be hosting a Growing Up 90s Family Night to go along with their Growing Up 90s Hancock County Edition exhibit. Families with children of all ages will be transported back to the 90s during the event on Saturday. Showcasing a variety of games, fashion, entertainment, crafts, and refreshments, attendees will be immersed in 90s nostalgia throughout the museum campus. The museum's Growing Up 90s Family Night is part of the Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation's April Fun for All series of free community events. Get more details about it in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, today is the day when the so-called reciprocal tariffs that President Trump announced last week will take effect. In the intervening days, markets both in the U.S. and internationally have been extremely volatile. Economists have warned of higher prices for consumers. Now, to be fair, the president did say that Americans would feel some pain, but the question is, how much pain, how soon, and for how long? Joining us this morning to break it all down is Bankrate financial analyst Stephen Cates. And Stephen, there are really two ways that average Americans are going to be feeling this in their retirement and their other investment accounts and on store shelves, right? That's basically the 1-2 punch. Or are there other ways that this might affect us?
Well, no, those are going to be the main two ways. And, you know, I think people are immediately feeling the heat in their investment accounts right now. And on the store shelves and through some additional ripple effects, is going to come down the line. I think that's probably already starting to happen and will in earnest in coming weeks.
So on the investment side, we'll start there. We've already seen that, as you mentioned. But have we seen the worst of it? Is the initial shock to the system past us, or could there be an even bigger downturn coming?
Well, I think it's incredibly hard to predict what is going to happen next. I think we all know how unpredictable things have been just in the last 3 months, yeah, let alone in the last few days. What the biggest risk is going to be for further, you know, shocks and downtrends is going to be the news out of the White House and from our trading partners. You know, if we get into a real trade war where we are one-upping, you know, China or the EU with reciprocal tariffs and retaliatory tariffs, that is going to send the markets back down. The other thing that's going to probably potentially impact us is recession fears. People are more concerned that that's likely in 2025 with these tariffs. And, you know, we're going to see reports on inflation come out later this week and GDP later this month.
To those points, first of all, what we saw on Monday, I think, goes to kind of what you were talking about and point that I wanted to get your thoughts on. Even the rumor that the president might pause the tariffs for a short time was enough to turn the market around from big losses to big gains, at least temporarily. Given the way that Donald Trump has always operated, both as president and in his private businesses, that everything is negotiable and subject to change at any time, doesn't that add to the volatility? Because, as we've always been told, the markets hate uncertainty more than anything else.
You're absolutely right. That kind of uncertainty, that kind of just worry about what is next, do we ever have any finality about this,
yeah,
is going to make markets very jumpy, because there's a lack of confidence that the administration is going to stick to a plan. And we've seen that time and time again.
And you mentioned the fears of a recession, which have been reignited. Maybe worth pointing out that some believe that maybe we were due for a downturn anyway, given the natural cycles of the market. And this may be the trigger the economy was looking for. But if it hadn't been this, it had been something else.
Yeah, I think we've been, you know, there's a lot of people out there having said we're due for a recession. But things are not bad today. But this is certainly a catalyst that could send things reeling, whether businesses pull back on investment, stop hiring, you know, raise prices. You know, this is going to be a big combination of events that could send things south.
So on the consumer side, is there any way to really know just how much of an inflationary effect this will have? I mean, that's been the main argument from many of the president's opponents here who have been raising those fears of a recession.
Well, it's easier to predict any single product. For instance, if we look at, let's say, avocados, we can look at what the added tariff on Mexican avocados are going to be and probably break that down. But more complicated parts of the economy, let's say auto parts or new cars, there's going to be ripple effects that are going to impact a lot of different sort of parts of that value chain.
Right.
Because we've got so many parts and autos crisscrossing different borders across Canada and Mexico and back to the US. And one of the things that's going to be sort of the downstream effect is not only on new autos, but repair costs, insurance costs, used car costs, rental car costs. And those will ripple through the economy because we've just got such an interconnected economy, you know, all over the world.
So let me throw out a couple of arguments that the administration has been making and sort of get your reaction. The Treasury Secretary on Meet the Press this past weekend pointed out that in the short term, day-to-day analysis, markets are quite often very volatile. Sharp sell-offs are frequent, and they are triggered by a lot of things. And he emphasized the importance of playing the long game and not getting wrapped up in this day-to-day thing. I would assume that you would agree that that is good advice.
So I agree with that. I do want to just highlight the fact that the two-day drop we had on Thursday, Friday, just to give context, was the fourth worst since 1950. Yeah. So last week was a very bad week, but for those who have a long-term time frame, they should absolutely stay the course. They should absolutely rebalance, readjust, and continue to invest.
And some in the administration have also been making the case that it's not so much the tariff policy, but the media frenzy over the policy that is leading to the panic. Is the media overhyping this?
Well, I mean, the media does what the media does. How could this not be covered very aggressively?
True. I mean, it's a big story.
Let's be honest. I mean, this we've raised tariffs to a level of the highest in 100 years. That's news. But the fact is that information is just consumed so much more readily by automated trading platforms within massive hedge funds and other institutions.
Yeah.
That impacts this.
That is a good point. So let me step back here, I guess, in that vein. Step back and look big picture. If we take the president at his word that in the end this will lead to more American manufacturing and that it will be the means to extract concessions from our trading partners that are more favorable to American exports, is it worth it? Again, some have debated that, but even if we assume that that would be the case, is it worth it? And how long would it take to start to reap those benefits?
That's a hard one to answer. It will be a long time. I think if you look at just, sort of hard manufacturing, it takes years to put those together. I think the hardest thing right now is that business doesn't feel confident about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
A business who wants to put a factory together and invest in the US, I think they have to feel confident that, let's say, in 2 to 4 years, policies are not going to be different, that they're not going to get burned in other ways.
Goes back to that uncertainty question.
The uncertainty question, you look at a company like Apple and many other sort of manufacturers abroad, Nike is another good example. They were encouraged very, very specifically to start to move some of their manufacturing out of China to other places. Where do they go? India, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, other countries. Well, those countries have even higher tariffs than China.
Yeah.
And so now those companies are feeling a little bit upset, I would imagine, because at the time they followed the policy they thought was in the administration, the U.S. best interest, and now here we are.
Yeah.
So those kind of things create a lack of confidence, a lot of uncertainty. It makes businesses much more gun-shy about investing in the U.S.
And obviously the complete unknowable question, what happens in the meantime while all of this sorts itself out? Because as history shows, by and large, Americans are not the most patient bunch when it comes to these matters.
I don't think they are. I think that people are kind of holding their breath a little bit. I think, on the investor side, we're obviously, starting to see maybe a little bit of a bottom. It's hard to know what's going to happen. I think, as you mentioned, rumor, innuendo, it's going to move the market in a big way in the coming days and weeks as we potentially have retaliatory tariffs from different regions and countries. That's going to compound some of the effects. But you know, what we do know is that if these persist, prices will be higher on just about everything.
Yeah, this is not the end. It is just the beginning. Again, Bankrate financial analyst Stephen Cates with us this morning, kind of breaking it all down as to what these tariffs mean for average Americans, both on the investment and the consumer side. Stephen, thanks very much for taking the time. Appreciate your insight.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Have you ever been, say, on a conference call or a virtual meeting where one of the participants was walking on a treadmill or doing some other form of exercise while trying to conduct business at the same time? If so, you are not alone. As professionals strive to optimize their productivity, a growing trend is emerging: working out while working. But does incorporating movement into the workday actually enhance performance, or is it just a distraction? Kylie Larson is a dynamic fitness, nutrition, and mindset expert who helps high achievers navigate the balance between fitness and productivity. And Kylie, that image of someone walking on a treadmill, you know, while they're on a call or in a meeting, that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind. But this idea of working out while working actually takes many forms. Whether it's, again, treadmills or those standing desks that are real popular, whatever it might happen to be, do they help or hurt productivity at the end of the day?
So I can only speak from like my personal experience and what I've experienced with my clients. I think it helps at the end of the day. A lot of people are now, they're more focused when they're walking and working on a task. So like your mind is focused on what it is that you're doing, and you're not worried about having to get your workout in afterwards. Now, I will say it's a fine line, right? I think walking on a treadmill is one thing versus going to a HIIT class while you're trying to conduct
sure.
a meeting.
Right.
But I think it's improving productivity.
I get the whole multitasking idea, but to me, it seems like some of this would be over the top. Maybe if it's not distracting to you, is it distracting for everyone else that, you know, is around you? So what is the science behind it? Convince me. Why can working out actually make you a better professional?
Well, the healthier you are, the better you're going to show up in every area of your life. And I think that's the biggest thing. But I do think there's a caveat to this. I don't think working out while working is necessarily the thing. I think it's having that standing desk, having a platform on your treadmill to where you can conduct a Zoom meeting while just not sitting on your bottom, mm-hmm. right? You're able to get your movement in while you are doing something that doesn't necessarily take a lot of brain power. Like walking on your treadmill or at your walking desk isn't appropriate for all bits of work that you're going to do. So you do have to be mindful, where am I actually going to incorporate? But if you're leading a team meeting, I think that is an excellent place to do it and encourage your team members to also get involved. So this was actually inspired by one of my clients who, she is the leader at her business. So she's trying to eat well. She's trying to get her steps in each day. She's crunched for time because she's booked, you know, 8 a.m. Yeah. to 6 p.m.
Right.
So she incorporated these walking meetings. This wasn't on a walking treadmill, but it was walking meetings at her campus. It got everybody outside. It got everybody encouraged to move. And they were able to have their work time, whatever they were talking about over work, all in the same vein. It shows her that she wants to take care of herself and then gives her employees permission to do the same. So I know I didn't get into the science, but I wanted to be clear on like where I actually think it's appropriate versus where it's not appropriate.
Right, because you understand the concern. There are times when it's appropriate to work out and times when it's more appropriate to sit still.
Exactly. Like if you and I were in a job interview right now, I would not be on my treadmill desk.
Right. Right. That would
be. If I were in a sales meeting, if I were like making a big pitch, I would not be on my walking treadmill.
Yeah.
But I think team meetings, regular client check-ins, depending on like what your relationship is like with your client, I think we all know we're strapped for time. Mm-hmm. Hopefully all of us are trying to be healthier. This is one small shift mm-hmm. that you can make.
It's interesting you mentioned, you know, being strapped for time. And obviously a lot of us know that feeling. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago during the pandemic, we kind of had this mind shift of, you know, work-life balance. And are we working overworking ourselves and not finding that accurate balance. It would almost seem like this is leaning into a lack of work time or work-life balance.
So this is so interesting because here's what I've noticed, because I've been working with clients pre-pandemic, pandemic, and then post.
Yeah.
Here's what I saw in this. Everybody slowed down in the pandemic, and a lot of people actually thrived from that balance standpoint because you couldn't do a lot of things.
Right.
And then after, when things opened up again, everybody went into hyperdrive. Every baseball tournament that was rescheduled, every work meeting that was rescheduled, every wedding, everybody had to go everywhere at once. And then they got burnout trying to fit everything in. And now we're trying to find that balance. I don't think that walking during a team meeting perpetuates perpetual busyness. Mm-hmm. I think it makes really good use of your time, because I know from speaking with clients while on my little treadmill desk, I can get 5,000 steps in an hour long meeting. Yeah. So if you can get 5,000 steps in, when you're walking really slowly, it's not like you're bobbing up and down and huffing and puffing. Mm-hmm. There's half your step goal for the day in one meeting. So this actually might free up time in the evening to do something else.
Yeah, fair enough. So again, we talk about the science, and there is science behind this. And by the way, you also talk about the psychology of it, you know, science in that respect, the psychology of high performance and how this fuels motivation and even discipline, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, absolutely. Think about it like this. An object in motion stays in motion. It's real easy to not want to get up and off of the couch or get away from your desk if you're just sitting there all day long. But movement begets more movement. Like, you don't feel motivated before you do the thing. You feel motivated. You get that feeling after you move. So if your walking is creating more motivation just because it's giving you more energy, movement creates energy, right? The right type of movement gives energy. Mm-hmm. Too much, too long drains your energy. This is, again, a low hanging fruit that could potentially spark more movement throughout the day, more intentional movements.
Well, certainly we know that Americans in general need to move more. We've known that forever. So maybe this is the secret to it. So for folks who may be hearing this and saying, okay, I'm convinced this is something that I would like to give a try. It's great if you're the manager or you're the boss. What if you are not the boss and your boss isn't necessarily sold on it? How do you bring others kind of into this way of thinking?
Right. So if that is the case, I'm used to being the boss, but if that were the case for me, I would suggest ask your boss, like, hey, I'm trying to work on my physical wellness so I can show up better for you at work, so I can generate more revenue, so I can make more sales. So whatever it is,
yeah.
Do you mind if I am on my walking desk during this meeting? I would ask, right? Because we want to keep our jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We want to be interested, but we want to keep our jobs. But it's a wonderful way then to encourage others. And maybe you would then inspire your boss. I think a lot of us are just looking for someone to let us know it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to do this.
Yeah.
We need permission.
And it certainly never hurts to explain to the boss what's in it for them. So
exactly. If you're telling me you're going to generate more revenue for me, do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Again, Kylie Larson is a fitness, nutrition, and mindset expert talking about this trend of working out while working. And maybe it is, I don't know, the missing link for both business and fitness. Again, two things that we're always looking at. Maybe blending them together is the secret. Where do folks learn more?
Oh, they can learn more on my Instagram. That's probably the best place to get a hold of me. It's at the Kylie Larson.
Kylie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
An 81-year-old New York woman says that she is stranded in Puerto Rico because her airline will not let her fly with her pet parrot. Maria Fratterigo says that Frontier Airlines gave her the okay to fly to Puerto Rico with her African gray parrot, Plucky, in a carrier. It's not like Plucky was out. It was in a carrier. And the airline said, yeah, that's fine. She could fly to Puerto Rico. But now, when she got to the main airport to return to JFK earlier this month, an airline representative told her she would have to lose the bird if she wanted to make the flight. They allowed her to fly there, but not to fly back. Frontier admits that allowing the parrot on board was in the first place was a mistake, saying that their policy is to not permit large birds in the cabin. But they let her, and now she can't get home. I mean, you would think you made the mistake. Okay, I get your policy is what it is, but you allowed her to take it down. The least you can do is allow her to bring it home. What is she going to do? Release the bird in Puerto Rico? Ms. Fraterigo, however you pronounce it, reportedly has not had any luck getting herself and Plucky booked on another flight either. They've even tried to charter a flight, and no one will fly the bird home. Now, in their defense, parrots can be extremely loud. I do happen to know that parrots can be extremely loud. So if they get into a screaming fit on board the plane, you don't want to be on that flight. I understand why they prohibited, but even a charter flight, they can't get a charter flight home. That's a bit of a problem. She may be stranded in Puerto Rico forever. More airline fun in the broken news this morning. While air travel affords us the luxury of eating thousands of feet in the air, it also presents the dilemma of what happens when you can't pay for the food that you want while flying thousands of feet in the air. Anne Marie Murray was flying on Ryanair, which is an international discount airline, and she had the unfortunate circumstance of learning exactly what happens in that situation when you have something to eat, but you can't afford to pay. It ends with a police escort off the plane, as it turns out. As Ms. Murray tells it, she had purchased a can of Pringles, a bottle of water, and a soda for a total of about $9. However, when she went to pay with her credit card, the transaction would not go through. Canceling the transaction was not an option because she had already started to eat the Pringles. And while she offered to take out cash at the airport once the plane landed, the crew informed her that that would not be an acceptable option. What else are you going to do? You're 37,000 feet. It's not like you can run to the bank and take out cash right there. And apparently it was the only card she had, so she was a little bit stuck. Even though she offered to take out cash at the airport once the plane landed, the crew informed her that wasn't an option, and instead she was told she would be led off the plane by police, an incident that she says was embarrassing, to say the least. Ryanair, meanwhile, stands by the action of its crew, the airline saying, as the crew looked to resolve the payment issue, the passenger proceeded to consume the items prior to payment and subsequently became disruptive. So it's a bit of they said, she said, but she was escorted off the plane because she could not afford to pay for her Pringles on board. Are we going to say anything about the Pringles costing $9? I mean, it's a little pricey. Let's see. Sometimes you don't have to go too awfully far to find the broken news. You know, we've had an awful lot of rain in Ohio and parts of the Midwest over the past week or so. And in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, the Ohio River has been flooding. And in response to those river floods, the owners of Captain's Quarters Riverside Grill in Northern Kentucky adopted an unconventional approach to protecting the business from flood waters. They instead flooded the building themselves using clean water in hopes of keeping the dirty flood water out. I'm not sure about this plan. Andrew Masterson, who owns the restaurant, filled the restaurant with 6 feet of fresh water from his sinks and a well water pump, aiming to prevent the silt from the floodwaters from entering the establishment. He notes they did disconnect kitchen equipment and electrical panels beforehand. The idea, he said, was to avoid costly cleanup efforts, but you still flooded your business. I wonder how the insurance company is going to feel about that, you know? I'm not sure that they thought that plan through completely. I get the idea, but I'm not sure if flooding your own business with fresh water is that much better. Okay. And a couple of other items here from the broken news. In Clearwater, Florida, you know this is going to be good. A man identified as Daniel Sorello was arrested outside an Applebee's wearing a pink wig, fake breasts, and a pink thong, causing a disturbance. Well, that would do it. That would, I think, cause a disturbance. Oh, and he was highly intoxicated at the time, according to the police report. Cops found him stumbling in the parking lot, attempting to enter a vehicle that was not his. Mr. Sorello appeared disoriented and could not answer basic questions about his whereabouts. Apparently didn't realize that he was in an Applebee's. Did he realize he was wearing a pink wig and thong? That's the part I... he was arrested for disorderly intoxication, was taken to jail, and later pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge with fines totaling $570. Now, they do note that records show that Mr. Cirillo's address is near the restaurant, so he was close to home. pink wig, fake breasts, and a pink thong causing a disturbance. Yeah, that would do it. And finally, in the broken news this morning, some fun at the border. Agents at the Sarita Border Patrol checkpoint in Texas stopped a white Ford Escape on Friday morning with some extra cargo, over 100 pounds of suspected methamphetamines. When they confronted the driver, Salvador Ruben Rodriguez reportedly told DEA agents that he was shocked that there was meth in the vehicle. He said he thought he was taking 4 pounds of cocaine into the country. Wait a minute. That can't be right. There's no meth in my car. I was smuggling cocaine. he has been charged with possession with intent to distribute a controlled substance. Again, not sure that the explanation makes it any better. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You've heard about Rotary. Isn't it time to take action? To learn more?
I'm Brian Treese, a lifelong resident of Hancock County and firm believer we as a community are at our best when we work together. That's the reason I love Rotary. It's a group of citizens who work together to learn about and improve the community we all call home.
Brian, who serves as president CEO of the Findlay Hancock County Community Foundation, understands the value of his membership in Rotary. Go to FindlayRotary.org to learn more.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Tax deadline day looming large now for anyone who has not filed yet. A new Gallup poll survey of 1,000 Americans finds that 50% of adults say that the income tax rate that they will pay is not fair. And 59% of respondents to the poll said the amount of federal income tax they have to pay is too high. Yes, indeed. This is perhaps the least surprising survey you will hear all week, maybe all year. 50% of adults say the income tax, their income tax rate is not fair. That is continuing a steady upward trend. In 2017, 35% said that their tax rate was unfair. About 46% of respondents said that they believe that they will pay a fair amount in federal income taxes, compared to 61% who said that in 2017. So it's been trending toward a feeling of more unfair. 59% of poll respondents said the amount of federal income tax they have to pay is too high. 38% said it's about right. And 2% actually said that the amount of federal income tax they have to pay is too low. Who's that 2%? Who are those people? I think it's too low. But I did think it was kind of interesting. 61% in 2017 said that they believed they would pay a fair amount of federal income tax. Now that's 46%. So, but 2% think it is too low. 70% of respondents say that corporations pay too little, and 58% said high income earners don't pay enough. Comparatively speaking, 58% said that lower income people have to pay too much in federal income taxes, while 54% said the same about middle income individuals. So, and again, they do this periodically. I don't know if they do it every year, but they do it periodically to kind of gauge how we feel about paying taxes. But I can't imagine that these responses are in any way, shape, or form surprising. And now to your health this morning. We're talking omega-3 fatty acids. Fatty acids, that is. Spit it out here. Omega-3s are among the so-called healthy fats that are considered essential for good health. Studies have shown that they can help with everything from decreasing risk of heart issues, reducing inflammation, lowering blood pressure, even reducing the risk of cognitive decline. As one dietitian told USA Today, omega-3 fatty acids can truly work wonders for your health. Now, the caveat is that 80% of Americans on average don't get enough omega-3s from their diets. And this is not something that your body produces on its own. Now, it should be noted, we're not necessarily deficient so much as we're not getting enough to reap all of the benefits from these omega-3s. 80% of Americans not getting enough. And that's encompassing all ages. For young people, that number is as high as 90% or more not getting enough omega-3 fatty acids in their diet. So, joining us this morning to talk about what we can do to get more of them, which, by the way, is kind of interesting. Fish is one of the main sources of this. And even though, you know, during this Lenten season, a lot of people consume more fish in their diet, we're still not getting enough. So, joining us this morning to talk about what we can do to get more is registered dietitian Dawn Jackson-Blattner. Dawn, let's start at the beginning here. Explain what omega-3s are specifically and why they are so important.
Yeah, so omega-3s are healthy fats. And we need them because our brain needs them. Our heart needs them. Our immunity needs them. Our joints need them. Our whole body needs these omega-3s. And as you mentioned, we are just not getting enough omega-3s in our diet.
So what are the best ways to get more omega-3s?
Okay, so omega-3s, particularly EPA and DHA omega-3, is found in two places, fatty fish and supplements. Now, fatty fish, here's a great acronym to remember which fish has the most omega-3s. It's SMASH. That's the acronym. It stands for salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. And of those fatty fish, we're supposed to be eating 2 to 3 fatty fish meals every single week. And so, like, I will make a salmon Caesar salad, or I'll make salmon tacos. But, you know, 80% of us are struggling to get enough fatty fish meals into our lives. So that's really where supplements can help us out and bridge that gap and give us more of those omega-3s.
Yeah, because let's be honest, I mean, most of us don't like many of those types of fish that you just mentioned. Salmon, okay. Beyond that, you're getting into some of the iffy areas. So what should people look for when choosing an omega-3 supplement?
Oh, you know, it's so confusing when you go down the aisle and there's like so many bottles.
Exactly.
But really what to look for when you want, when you want omega-3, krill oil is really your top choice. And the reason being is that krill oil has this special form. It's called a phospholipid form that our body cells just love to absorb. It's so easily absorbed. And that's what you want when you take a supplement. You want to make sure you're taking it and that your actual cells are absorbing it. So krill does a great job of that. Krill is also very easy for us to digest. So that means there's no fishy aftertaste, which is also important when you're taking a supplement, that you enjoy taking it. Krill has omega-3, like we're talking about, but krill also naturally has choline and astaxanthin in there. So it's a powerful multi-nutrient, and krill is sustainable. Less than 1% of all the krill is fish. So that those are all great reasons, you know, to take krill. But if you go down the aisle and you see, like, okay, I said take krill, there's a lot of different brands of krill, and you really want a trusted brand like Now. They use the most researched and sustainable krill on the market called Aker Biomarine NKO. And so if you see a Now bottle of krill, you'll actually also see a little NKO logo on the label. That means you're getting this high-quality krill oil.
So I'm almost a little hesitant to ask this, and maybe you should preface this by saying that you do want to talk with your doctor, your healthcare professional, because everybody is probably going to be a little bit different on this. But how much should people take daily as a general rule of thumb?
Yeah, I love that you prefaced it with that. Yeah, anytime you talk about supplements, talk to your doctor, talk to your dietitian about what's right for you. But most of the time, 1 to 3 grams of krill a day is about the average dose.
And where do folks get more information on all of this?
Okay, so yeah, krill, it's such a hot topic. It's something we all need to know more about. So nowfoods.com/krill is where you can go to read more about this and even give the supplement a try.
Again, 80% of us, this applies to just about everyone, because 80% of us are not getting enough of these omega-3s from our diets alone. So again, DJ Blattner, registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified specialist in sports dietetics with us this morning. DJ, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Very important to, as we mentioned, talk with your doctor, because it should be pointed out that there is such a thing. While most of us are not getting enough, and again, it's like 90% or more of young people, but 80% of us of all ages not getting enough. Even though we're not getting enough, it is possible to get too much. And usually if you're getting too much, the side effects are mild, but something you want to talk with your doctor about. Omega-3 fatty acids, not getting enough. Fish and supplements, the most common way of getting some of the other foods. And USA Today, I referenced a little bit earlier, they did a piece on this a couple of days ago. I don't know if you happen to see it. Some of the other foods that are high in omega-3 fatty acids you can add to your diet. Nuts and seeds, including flaxseed, chia seeds, walnuts, flaxseed oils, soybean oils, canola oils, and fortified foods like eggs, yogurt, juices, milk, soy beverages, and baby formulas are also good sources of omega-3s. So, to your health this morning. We have a link on our webpage, goodmornings.net, to learn more. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage, our little corner of the World Wide Web, and that is at goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Again, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.